today we have Chavez Fide. She is the pastor's wife of Tim Fide, and he's the pastor at associate pastor at Father's House. They've got three kids, but you can tell a little bit right just now. So can we just, I know we know a lot, but let's just give her a hand on the floor. Nice to have you at Chauvin.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so the reason I asked Chauvin to talk about this is because we were at the art school and we were having this discussion after the whole event of the child that was kidnapped, and there was a lot of people talking about it, and a lot of people responded in Shia. And what was refreshing to me is the way that Chauvin responded, and she was just, she had all these practical things that she was doing with the kids, and the way she was speaking, she didn't speak out of fear. And so I said to her, Chauvin, I think you should share your thoughts with more people, and that is why we are here today. I mean, a lot of us are concerned about our children, but you kind of took it further. You've invested some of your efforts and even just your teaching to your kids. Where did this start? Why the big interest in safety?
You know, I was actually thinking about it, like, just over the last week and when it actually did start. When you get pregnant, there's that whole thing of, oh my word, I'm responsible for another human being, and like there's fear that comes of, like, I could lose this baby, or I could miscarry, and or if there's something wrong, and just walking that road of dealing with that fear, and then now the human being is out in front of you, and you're like, I remember the first time was. I'd taken my little one to church in the pram, and somebody reached into the pram and wanted to pick her up. And it's a cultural thing. It wasn't that there was any danger, but I realized right then and there, okay, I need to make my child safe from germs and all of that, but without offending the person that's picking up the baby or wanting to touch the baby. So then immediately I started, my mindset shifted then. In terms of, okay, I want to keep my child safe without offending anybody, and I also want to, I don't want to live being afraid that somebody can just snatch my baby from me. So I then was like, okay, the best thing that I could do is put my baby in a carrier. My baby's with me, she's safe, everybody can look at the baby, and then nobody's getting offended. So that was when it actually started in terms of my thought process to safety. And that was 12 years ago. And my oldest is very, she was a very confident child, and she got to the stage that, you know, in our culture also is that, you know, you come into a room and now kiss the woman, kiss the auntie, kiss the, like, greet everybody and give, and she was just like, no, I don't want to kiss anybody. And it was also at that time that I felt, okay, but this is your human right. Like, okay, how do I, say to her, okay, yes, you can be like that, but also auntie and uncle, it's not you, it's actually her right to be like this. Don't be offended that she's, and so then it was a case of teaching her, okay, but we still are polite to the auntie and uncle, but you don't have to kiss them. You have your right, and they need to respect your boundary. There was also, I was just thinking, the main, I remember when I had my first child, I was like, if I can teach her and be hard, like, it sounds so strict and so harsh, but if I can lay the boundaries down as hard as I can with my first child, then the other ones will just follow. And so I remember being very strategic in my discipline with her. I was, I wanted her to be, I felt that instead of putting fear into her, teaching her the importance of obedience. Because in being obedient, then when I say stop and you're running in the road, she would stop and know that mom knew best or dad knew best. And that was my first, like, as she was growing up. And then what happened was that when the second one came along, she saw the older one listening, and it was easier for me to teach her, because when I said stop, then she did. It was even little things like when we jump out of the car, you put your hand on the car and stand still. Like that was the, and she didn't know why, But for me, it was a case of I had to keep her still so that she wouldn't run into the road and get hit by another vehicle. And when she did, there are moments like I have a son now, and it's a case of, no, but the road is open, I want to run. And it's true. And I remember watching a lot of, have you ever heard of Super Nanny? Has anybody seen Super Nanny? Just the tip of going down to their level and looking in their eyes. And speaking to them firmly without being scary. And just saying, this is important. You need to understand the reason why I'm telling you to put your hand on the car is because, and then making them look around. And I remember doing that quite fervently when my oldest was small. And they just continued the culture of, this is what we do. When I'm talking to you, and I think when it came to that whole thing of when mommy comes down to my level, okay, whoa, she's serious. But it wasn't a scary thing. It was more of like, this is important. I need to communicate with you right now. And I think, because even now, I don't have to do it as often with my son. They just know that it's part of our family culture. I don't know if that's...
Yeah. And what age do you start talking about this, about real danger or real things? Do you just teach this as that they have to be obedient, that they have to trust you? Or is there an age where you start speaking to them? And, I mean, I understand car safety, but what about people safety or people that are
like
dangerous?
Stranger danger
and those things. When was there a specific age where you started a discussion or what happened?
When they're little, you can't actually have conversations with, like, you can't have conversations with your two-year-old to say, you know, that this is, these are the strange people, and this is whatever. But I think I had a God moment where I thought, how do I teach my child without making them scared about who is safe and who isn't, and I began to notice, you know, the whole, this is the uncle, and this is the auntie, and even like at the supermarket, say good morning to the auntie, and as I started at about when Aiden was starting to talk, so she was about two and a half years old, and now starting to address people, who's in the zoo, and I realized that when she was calling everybody auntie and uncle, she was being friendly with everybody. Then in that moment I thought, I actually need to create a boundary here because that is not her uncle. That is not my brother-in-law who I trust more than the cashier, or whatever. And so without saying don't speak to the stranger, because I do want her to have an evangelical heart. Because that's also part of the long goal. I have to think about what kind of adults am I raising, what kind of men and women am I raising. So I can't just think about the little, like the 6 month, two year old. I have to think about the grown up, and how I want them to treat people in general. So what I did was that I started to look at different cultures and how they taught respect. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the way that the Americans do sir and ma'am. And I thought, ooh, it'd be nice to teach my children how to say ma'am, you know? These little kids going around, yes, ma'am. You know? But then the more I thought about it, I was like, no, how do you teach your child to say ma'am? And then people are going to be like, what is ma'am? And then I thought, we have a ground rule that I explained to my children, because then when they got to about five, they asked me, why do we say this? But at about 2-3 years old, I was like, this is the Mr. and this is the Mrs. and this is your aunt and your uncle and this is the pastor and this is the coach, this is the teacher. And then they were able to then put the labels on the people and be like, okay, this is where they fit in the subconscious trust bubble.
Okay.
So then they would now, okay, if I say, now say good morning to the Mr., then they would know, oh, okay, good morning, Mr. And then they'd look at the person's job or whatever, says Mr. Cleaner or Mr. or even Mrs. Even our house cleaner, it was we changed it from Miss Apollonia to Auntie Apollonia because she's been with us for so long, and they now know, okay, she's now Auntie. And they know that when we call Mr. and Mrs., it's because we've known them for longer than the children have been alive. So then that they know, okay, Mom and Dad trust this person. Therefore, I can, like, if this person was to come and pick me up somewhere without Mommy knowing, if that's a Mr., I don't go with that person. But if that's an auntie or an uncle, they would know that. So I think that was a huge thing for us as a family in terms of setting boundaries without me saying, stranger danger, from little. And then when the conversation changed at 5, 6 years old, that's when the questions explode. Like, my children rained down on me. It was a very, very, very explanational time.
So tell us about that change. What happened that time when they started asking questions? What kind of questions did they ask? Did you address it immediately? Did you wait? Tell us about it.
The sex talk came up.
At 5?
Yeah, at 5.
Wow.
And I think what happens is that they start to observe their world a little bit more curiously. They shift from, I don't know if you've noticed that about 2, 3, everything's mine. Don't touch mine. It's mine. It's mine. It's mine. So it's all about them. And then at about 4, then they're like, oh, you're my friend. I can play with you. And we can play together. And then they actually go beyond the little people and start looking around at the world around them. And my oldest started to observe, hey, that's a mommy and that's a daddy and that's the baby. So then they must be married and have the baby. That was how, okay. But then there were more mommies coming into our lives with no daddies. And so then they wanted to know, because we had said to them, you know, Mommy and Daddy love each other and they pray and God gives them a baby. that's what worked, and that's how, like, and how the questions just came up is that we'd be in the car, and I have been very intentional in terms of finding the sweet moments, because you can just sit in the car and blob and just drive. And the kids are just looking out the window in the back. And when they are not making noise, and then there's that lull of quiet, I take the moment. And I immediately say, okay, guys, what do you think about this? And that's when the questions come up. I feel like, as a parent, I feel like I need to get ahead of the game so that I can be first point of reference in terms of information. So I don't give them the big question to ask. I just put a seed in for them to think about it and see what happens. So what happened was that there was, I could see the way that they were observing people because they're little and they're totally judgmental. You can see it. They're like, oh, you know, your outfit. I wear 2 different earrings and I get judged the most by 5-year-olds. Seriously, and they'll come to me like, why are you wearing 2 different earrings? And that was the age. And so then they would ask, when I'd be in the car and I'd be like, okay guys, so what do you think? Where do babies come from? And then my youngest was like, yeah, mommies and daddies pray together and then they have a baby. Like, okay. Aislinn, that was at the time she was 3. So then the older one was 5. And so she's like, yeah, but Uncle Joshua, who is my husband's nephew, Uncle Joshua and his girlfriend are pregnant, but they're not married. How did they get a baby in their tummy? And then I'm like, and then the golden question was, what do you think? And because then also on the inside as a parent, you're thinking, oh, I have to give them everything now. I have to tell them all the birds and the bees. And it's actually, no, you can actually gauge where they're at and give them the information they need, where they're at when you get that answer. So if I ask them, okay, what do you think? Then they're like, oh, no. And they come up with some long, stringent answer. And it makes sense. Because and you can keep it at that level. But my 5-year-old was at a place where she was like, no, you said that mommies and daddies pray to God and they get a baby. Now, how did they pray and they're not married. And then it was a case of, okay, I can see you're ready for the talk, whereas she's not ready for the talk. And then I would take the opportunity to then be like, okay, we're going to change the subject a bit now in the car, and then I know, okay, I'm going to take her aside and give her a little bit more information, because she's going to get more and more curious about it. And I've just done that in general. The topic of why do we call Mr. and Mrs.? And then I was able to explain to the one that asked, why do we call Mr. and Mrs.? And explaining to her why. And another thing I've made a decision as a parent is that I will always tell my children the truth. I don't joke with them. They know this. My husband teases them to death. And it's okay. And I said to him, it's important that they have that in their life. But I think by me saying that I'm always going to tell them the truth, they know that whatever they ask, they come to me and I'm going to give it to them straight. I've always thought about it as my long game.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Just on the topic of when they're teenagers, you or someone else who has, I think it's personality.
Yeah.
My two children differ quite a lot. My oldest, they are 5 and 3. The oldest daughter, she is not a touchy-feely one. Like, he's not the I love you. He doesn't like hugs. He doesn't like conversation. Like, when I like those intentional conversations, she
shies away from them.
So I'm she just turned 5, so I'm already a little bit worried about the teenager years. So I want to really build that relationship, really want to build it now. So
yeah.
An open space, but already it's her personality. She doesn't like that. But I actually don't know. So my husband suggested just telling stories from my own stories, just like one sentence stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know if someone else has.
I actually have my oldest wears her heart on her sleeve, and is, like, she's the one that's curious and asks the questions and is out there. And my second one is extremely affectionate, but is a closed book. Like, she is. Somebody gave me the metaphor of that your children's heart is like a house with windows and doors, and when they get to about 8, 9 years old, they start to click shut. And you have to get in there. Like, you are the sunlight as the parents, trying to get in, get all the as much information in there. But the moment they start to click shut and go, and some kids are naturally born with shutters already, and you have to spend your life trying to pry to get in. And my second one struggles with confrontation. She struggles with, if I ask her, what do you think? She's just like, she clams up and literally puts the blanket over her face and won't speak. And this very weekend, I had to say to her, it's important that you have an opinion. It's important that you speak what's in your heart and in your mind. Now she's 9 years old, so, and it has been a road. And yet she's a very vocal child, which is very funny, because on the side, like, when it comes to serious stuff and speaking to her and asking her what she thinks, she clams up. But when she's on her own and she's playing, she's the loudest in the bunch, and I have to constantly tell her to keep quiet. But when it comes down to serious things, I think it's finding the sweet spot in the day when she responds the best to you. And also, it doesn't always have to just be you. I've also found that my husband is amazing at seeing what each child needs. He noticed without me even knowing. I mean, I'm the mom. I should have known that this was coming. About 3 weeks ago, he said, I think that she likes a boy. And I'm like, what do you mean she likes a boy? I'm very open about that with my kids. I'm just like, oh, you can like a boy, it's great, you know, it's great, let's just keep it that way, yeah, other ways. But he said, no, I think she likes a boy. And I'm just like, what makes you think that? He says, no, she's just become very clingy and lights up more when I give her affirmation. And so I was like, okay, so now what? Like, no, here's the mom. I didn't see this coming, and now this man has noticed this in my child.
Your child.
Yeah, because I'm homeschooling them and I'm with them all day, so I should be able to see this. and be able to know who the boy is. And so then he said no. When he saw it, he just gently went to her and just asked her gently, like, do you like someone right now? And so she shyly said yes. And she responded better to him than to me. So I think it's also seeing as a marriage couple that your husband might actually be able to get in there more than you, and seeing that as a valuable asset to being a team. I think that's another thing I've come to realize, is that as much as I feel like I'm the mom and this is not my job, and not even my calling, it's just my everydayness. And this is what I should be doing, and I'm investing in these kids, and blah, blah, blah. So he should be working and doing them. It's funny how that you put yourselves in those blocks, and that he shouldn't be maternal. But it's amazing how the Holy Spirit showed him, and he was able to go in there with a nugget. And then when she said yes, he then immediately stepped into gear and said, okay, I'd like to go on a date with you. And started seeing what she needed, and that she was actually needing to be shown that she's beautiful, and that she is worthy of somebody's liking her, and that she is, And that was, for me, that was, I stepped back and I'm like, oh my word, this parenting journey is hectic, because you're still learning so much. My oldest didn't need that. And so I don't know if that helps you. So I think use your hubby as a tool.
I can just also say, I also got the older daughter that was like that from young age, and I also found, like you said, you have to find that moment in the day. So when she was smaller, when she was in the bath, you know, I would go and sit with her while she was bathing, and then we would chat. And now I find, between 10 and 12 at night, yeah, that's the time she wants to speak.
Oh, really?
I mean, I can't do it every night, but I try to, you know. So, there will be a time when she's more open.
Yeah, I've heard that there was a mom who also said to me that her child was as a teenager, the whole day the mom would be available, but between 10 and 12, that was the time that they wanted to talk. So, not for your child yet. So just to transition back a bit, I love these rabbit trails, they were absolutely fine. But you shared with me something that is very important about instincts. Can you just share with the group your thoughts on instinct, and what do you mean by that, and how did you use that to teach your kids about safety?
Just in terms of trusting your gut, I love my husband for this, because he acknowledges the sixth sense that a woman has. No, seriously, he says there's something that God's given you as a woman that He hasn't given men, and that you don't have to explain why, but it just is there. And I think by him encouraging me in it, it helped me to identify that for my children. And I remember when Aislinn was little, and she sat on my. I think it was, she sat on my dad's knees, and he was bouncing her on his knees and stuff. And I looked at that and I thought, okay, there was no yucky feeling. And so which was fine. But then somebody else took her, another guy, and did that. And then I thought, okay, no, this isn't feeling right. But at the same time, she's just had fun on her dad's lap, not on her grandfather's lap, but now how do I, without offending the man that this is happening with, teach my daughter this is not okay? And it was trusting the fact that I felt something was off. And it wasn't that there was anything wrong with the man. I think it was more of a highlight of this is, What if there is something wrong? What if there is an ulterior motive here? And even if there isn't, we want our children to be taught this is not okay. And so then I politely called her over. I said, Aislinn, just come here. And so she's like, no, mommy. I'm like, no, come, I need to talk to you. And then I pulled her aside and I said, my sweetheart, you don't sit on just anybody's lap. You can only do that on daddy and papa. And even now, we change the rules with Papa, because Papa's my father. And we say, no, not on the lap. You can, can just sit next to Papa. And so she's like, oh, okay, okay, and off she went. The older she got, she wanted to know why, and then I explained a little bit as to why to her understanding. And then I politely went over to the gentleman and I said, listen, don't worry, it's not about you. I'm just trying to teach my child a little bit about boundaries. And he was like, oh, okay, no, cool. And it also happened again when I was in a, my mom reminded me of this. We were in a meeting. I led a multimedia team, and I brought my kids along. And the one gentleman I fully trust, and I fully he also was given the title uncle because we've known him for long. And my daughter had sat on his sat on his knees, and she was sitting at the table drawing and coloring, and he was rubbing her back. And then I was like, no. And that immediate feeling of this, I need to stop this, not only for her sake but for his, so that he needs to learn this is not a this is not appropriate, but without offending him, and without putting fear into the same thing, not putting fear into my daughter. So then I was like, okay, Aizen, come. I think you need to sit here, and you can do your coloring here. And then went over to Mario. His name is Mario. I went over to him and I said, listen. Dude, I think that, and we had the relationship for me to be able to talk like this and say, dude, I think it's actually inappropriate that you do that with a little, with a little girl. I even think it's inappropriate for a little boy as well, and to do that. And so he's like, oh, cool, I didn't mean, and I said, I know you didn't mean anything, but I just want you to be aware of it, because it's a boundary that you that you can so easily cross, and you're not teaching her safety and nothing. And he was like, no, that's cool, I'm all for the safety of your kids, and blah, blah, blah. And he continued to love my kids, and I there was no boundary, no friendship break. Another, that's with my oldest. My second one gets born, and she's extremely affectionate, so much so that my husband cannot be out of the house for longer than 10 days. So he travels quite a bit. And the moment day 10 hits, she immediately shuts down. Emotionally, physically, she stops giving love, she stops giving whatever, but starts to seek it in other men, which was shown as little as, when's the crawling age? Eight months? She started showing that already. I remember the day we were in Home Affairs, and I was handing in papers for marriage license or something, and she hopped out of my lap, crawled across, and climbed into the lap of another man that she did not know at all. Sure. No. And I'm sitting here going, my kid needs to know that this is not okay. But at the same time, I don't want her to be shut down to being affectionate with people. And so then we've now set a boundary as a family. My husband can't be out of the house for longer than 10 days. And if he is, then we need to be very strategic in terms of how I'm not a lovely person. I'm not affectionate at all. I have to think about it. It's something that I have to be like, oh, this human being needs a hug. Okay. it's the truth. I have to think about it. And so when Irena was born, when I noticed, oh my word, why is she climbing into the lap of this complete stranger? I realized that I had to step up in terms of, I think this is where instinct came in terms of I have to be aware of what my child needs. And in order to keep her safe, and I didn't have to tell her anything, I just had to give her what she needed. And it was a case of that. And so then now, if he's longer than 10 days, I shower that child like you won't believe with hugs and kisses, and so much so that she's pushing me away. And I'd rather have that than she be needing anything and trying to seek it out in other people. Other instinct moments. At the moment with my son, my gut is telling me that I need to be a lot more aware with my son. I don't know why. And just that I can't leave him alone as much, just to run freely. Because we've always been a ministry family. You figure that the church venue is a safe place. And whilst you're talking with people and sharing with them, they can just run free. But I'm at the moment feeling I actually can't just leave my son, which has been quite an interesting change for me. because my girls ran freely. My one used to strip naked and run through the venue, which was lots of fun. but with Jude, I just feel there's more of a trust. I don't know why I have to trust my gut feeling here. I'm not afraid of anything that could happen, but I'm trusting the fact that the Holy Spirit has given me this awareness of something that I need to protect him from. I don't know what it is, but I'm doing it. I have to be like, okay, where is he? I need to keep tabs on him. Where is he? Who is he with? He's one that naturally attaches to men as well, and different men. It's not that he's lacking in any way from his father. He sees somebody cool and he thinks that's the guy I want to be with. Like, he's got cool hair, cool t-shirt. I want to be with that guy so I can be awesome. And it's just being aware of that, and each stage gives its different instinct, I think.
And do you teach your children as well to be aware of this, that they feel the instinct? Can you tell us about that?
Yes. If they feel uncomfortable in any way, I let them. So, like, even the whole thing of I don't do kisses. She literally would do that as a two-year-old. I don't do kisses. and lots of people thought it was rude, and I just had to say, well, she doesn't, and that's okay. And even that whole thing of when you introduce your child to somebody and then they shine behind your leg,
mm-hmm.
and that is an instinct for them.
Yeah.
And allowing them to feel that instinct is a good thing, and that they should trust that. They know who they can trust and who they can't trust. And it's allowing them to cultivate that feeling. By saying to them and forcing them to do stuff, you're not allowing them to feel that feeling. And then they just trust anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they feel a little bit like, oh, this person's a bit dodgy, or this person is standing a bit close, I'd rather they feel that than just be anything. So from little, I've just allowed them to have they're not allowed to be rude about it. Like, that's one thing I do teach them, is that, if you don't like that man across the... don't you pointing out at the person and being like that and giving names. But at the same time, I allow them, okay, if you don't want to sit next to that person, it's okay. Even if they feel like they don't want to sit next to their uncle at the table...
Mm-hmm.
Aislinn, my oldest, came to me at one stage, and my brother-in-law was taking photos of his own sons at the swimming pool, and she came to me afterwards and she said, Mom, I'm a bit uncomfortable with Uncle taking photos of us at the pool. And so then I thought, oh, this is awkward. But at the same time, I didn't belittle her feelings. I still said to her, that's okay. Do you want me to talk to him? And she said yes. So then I was like, okay, I will go talk to him and explain to him how you feel, and we go from there. And I did. I spoke to him and I said, listen, she's just a bit uncomfortable. You can take photos of them, but when she's not in the pool. And then he was like, oh, okay, no, cool. And he carried on. I think it's just allowing them the freedom to feel afraid, allowing them to feel... Just as much as you allow them to be confident, allowing them to have that feeling of, okay, there's something wrong.
And do you actually, you told me, I know with your teenagers you have discussions deliberately about it. You told me about a scenario that you sketched for them. What do you do if you go to the bathroom and you've got this unsettling feeling? Can you just share with the group? And also, did you do that from young, or was it only from when they were older?
Yes, I did it from young. I don't know, the media is hyped it at the moment. If you notice, next year, September, it will be exactly the same. It has been like this since my child was 2 years old, 2 to 3 years old. There was the 2010, Soccer World Cup happened, and there was a massive hype. And the reality is that it is happening, and it's not that we are, naive or ignorant to it. Like, I'm not going to just brush it aside and say it's just media. The fact is that it is true. It's just that it's constantly happening. It doesn't just happen in September. There was a lot of trafficking that heightened in 2010, and that was when my children were 3 and 1 years old, and I was I remember watching, because they also put a lot of stuff on media And there was a program I watched. I don't know if they still got that show. It was on, is it Something Beginnings? I don't know what it was. Anyway, and they were in Johannesburg. There's a lot of hijackings, and so they were. This lady, this child psychologist or something, or child safety person, came onto the show and said, you know what, you need to prepare your children for what if this happens. And of course, as a parent, you're just like, but how can I play this scenario with my children all the time? And she said, well, you need to coach them. If you drive into your yard and there's somebody standing in the yard and they are wanting to take you or the car, whatever, you need to teach your children what to do so that you can save them. And then I felt that that was so valuable. And she said, you just play this, you just gently tell them, okay, guys, when if mommy gets in trouble in the front, what do you do? And I say this word. And then she said on that show, you teach them to unbuckle themselves. And then there was a strategic, she said that you have to strategically put your baby chair in a place where you can reach over and pull them out yourself with one arm. So that if somebody came in, I was like, oh my word, that's so clever, because naturally you're thinking put the baby behind you because that's the safest place, but physically I can't reach over. So that, I was like, oh my word, that's a clever thing to do, to plan a strategy in terms of why I'm putting certain things in the car for that scenario. And so then she's like, yeah, and then you just play it out. It's like, who can get out the quickest? Out of the car, and then you just play in the driveway. And so she said that you make it a playful situation so that should it arise, you're not going to say it is, should it arise, they have a trigger and they immediately know what they need to do. And so then, and also it's just great muscle skills as a mom, you know, killing them. So in teaching your older ones, so I could teach my 3-year-old to unclip the car seat so that she knows to unclip, she unclips and she walks. And they gave a step-by-step on how the kid must get out of the car, not through the back door, through the middle with you as the parent, so you have your children.
Sure.
And when I watched that show, I was like, this is gold. And so I needed to apply those very things to my situation. So I thought, okay. So I took my everydayness, and I plotted out, okay, what would I do if this happened? And how do I teach my children the tools in terms of this, if this was to happen? So then my children know when we jump out of the car, I say to everybody, we all jump out on the same side of the car. Okay, mom, but why? So I said, no, I jump out on this side, that means all of us jump out on this side. Why? Because if you jump out on that side and I can't see you and we've jumped out next to somebody that could just put you in their car, then I can't get to you. And so then they're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And so then that's what we did. We just naturally do that now. And what was interesting is that once we were getting milk in Brackenfell, and it's not to say that the person was a bad person, he just greeted the kids. And he was parked in his car next to us, and my second one accidentally jumped out of the car on her side. And he greeted her, and she got the fright of her life and jumped right back into the car and realized, oh, I'd gotten out on the wrong side of the car. And so then, but she didn't, I think it was more of a penny drop moment where she's like, oh, I see why mom said what she said. And so now they all jump out on the same side of the car. That's just one simple scenario. When we go to, my kids aren't allowed to scream when they play. And so people are like, but how do you stop a kid from screaming when they play? And I'm like, well, I've taught them screaming is when you get hurt and when you can't get out of something. Our swimming pool, when it was working, it doesn't work anymore. They would be swimming and they'd be screaming and da da da. And I always ran out to them thinking something was wrong. And I'm like, no, guys, you can't scream unless something is wrong. Because if you scream now, I'm constantly coming out. And when there is an actual problem, I'm not going to be able to get, I'm not going to respond as quickly. So I need you to know that the scream is for me to respond. So that was also another safety thing. So they would, I said, okay, I don't mind you laughing, I don't mind you shouting, but screaming is for when you are getting hurt. And so then, so now I'm teaching my son. It's the hardest thing to try and teach my boy. We don't scream. You don't scream unless, and it's a constant drilling. But they now, my oldest now understand why, and it's so that's one safety thing I've done. There's more where we've had conversations when we're going to the mall, especially because in 2010 there was a lot of whatever. We had the rule that everybody was strapped in the pram, and when we walk in the shop or anything, we all walk in front of mom and dad because we need to be able to see everybody. I mean, it's three little people, but if you want to be walking, you used to walk in front or you hold our hand. And so then they know this. So the girls walk. They know that when I do grocery shopping on my own, the two hold the trolley. They hold the trolley, and Jude is in the trolley. He used to be in the pram, and so on. And then we walk together, and then I say to them, it's just so that I know where you are, and I can, if I can't reach you, at least I've got you. And then they're like, no, that's cool. And then what was so nice is that because we've got that culture as a family, if I needed to, I was going to get a leash. I was prepared for that for my son. I was like, if I need to, I'm going to put a leash on him. I don't care what people think. It's the fact that I'm keeping my kids safe.
Yeah.
Yes, I would have put it on him if I needed, because there are kids that need to be running, but at the same time, and even then there's stuff that you have to be careful of, how you strap it on, make sure that it's all safe and whatever. An old lady came to us in Pick and Pay once. And she came to me, she says, I've just been observing you whilst you shop. And it's been so nice to see how organized you look. And I was like, thanks. The fact that she was watching me in a good way meant that there was probably somebody in a bad way watching me.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And I've never actually thought about that until now. because I also take the approach of the animal kingdom has so much to offer in terms of how they operate.
Mm-hmm.
And if the animal kingdom works, that there's safety in numbers and there's safety in staying close together, then why don't we apply it as human beings?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to run off on your own, you're not safe. And so just teaching them and showing them videos. Like, I don't show them the killing, praying stuff. I don't get there. But it's just a case of telling them. I tell them, like, if you're not within reach of us, we can't do anything for you. And it's saying that, like, mom and dad are the best and safest place for you to be right now. And that's I didn't put fear in them. It's just showing them that that's how we do things. And that was when they were little. And then when they got bigger, we got, before we go to the mall, I gently have the conversation. I don't apologize for it. I just say to them, okay, guys, now we're going to the mall. This is how we're going to... I think I take it from when my mom and dad used to do this, when we used to go to the shop, and they said to me, we're going into Toys R Us right now, and nobody's getting anything.
Yes.
and then you just... And then the child... As a child, you go in going, okay, we're just here to look at toys. Then I'm not... no matter how... And if I threw a tantrum, then it's a case of, well, you know what's coming when you get home, or the discipline is there. And I thought, if I can get that mentality in terms of toys and how we're approaching the store, then we can also get that mentality in terms of, this is how we're going to conduct ourselves.
Yeah.
In a shop. When we go to the mall, how do we walk, everybody? We all hold hands. Yes. And when we, and if anything happens, what do we do?
I don't know.
What do you mean? What, something, so I said no. What if somebody tries to take you away from me? I would. And then my second one comes up with this whole, like, shebang, magic moment. And I'm like, no, this is what you do. And I said, you bite, you scream, you kick, you make a scene because I want people to see that there's something wrong. Oh, okay, mom, okay, cool. And that's what, and so every time we go into a public place, even today, I say in the car, what do we do when we get to a mall? Remember, it's really busy. I think about it every day when the mall is pretty empty, we don't give that conversation, but around Christmas, around cycle tours, around everything, when the malls are full, I keep saying, I say to them, what do we do when we go to a mall? And then they chant it out at the back.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, that's great. you got it. And then I know, okay, they're in the frame of mind that this is what we need to do. And that's what we've done.
I want to add to the screaming that someone said you should teach your kids to scream, this is not my mom, this is not my mom, because they say people don't look because they think it's a tantrum. So to be sure to teach them to say, this is not my mom. You said something as well when we were having a conversation about teaching your kids to make the body heavy.
Yes.
Can you share that with
us? they play, I teach them to play how to get out of a difficult situation. So like if somebody grabs you, what do you do? And there's a technique that's actually taught in Cape Town. A friend of mine told me about it, called Krav Maga. It's like a Jewish Hebrew technique on how you can use your little, like your body to its best, to your advantage, even if the person is like four times your size. So even taking down Theo, you can learn how to take down a man that's like one and a half times your size just by applying certain techniques. And one of the techniques is to actually drop, just to be as dead as possible. You drop, you lose all muscle, you tension, because the more you fight, the lighter you become. The less you fight, the heavier you become. And so then if I don't know if you've noticed, like your babies get to about 11 months old and you're like, dude, this is a lot. Like, this is a lot of person to carry. And when your three-year-old decides they just don't want to go anywhere and you're dragging this three-year-old around, that's harder to deal with than somebody that's tense and actually helping you keep them up. We're actually, we were given a video now recently. I showed the kids, I said, hey, this is what we can apply to our technique. where they drop and then clamp, hold the legs, like holding each other's legs, holding the person's
adult legs.
Adult or even each other. They play together because my 12-year-old is much bigger than my 4-year-old, so she pretends to be the bad guy.
So do they just grab the legs like this?
There's actually, you clamp around one and clamp around the other. So like say if the legs were, I'm just trying to explain, say the legs of this chair were a person, you drop as heavy as you can and you grab one leg and you clamp your other legs around the other. So then you look like a little clamp on the bottom of the person. And the person can't walk and they can't pick you up because you've clamped yourself around.
Wow. Yeah. So your kids will practice this?
Yeah, they'll practice it now. They'll play with it and I think that's the joy of it, is that they're playing. But I was so encouraged to hear from my 9-year-old when the hype was being made on media. She was like, you know, there's a part of me that just wishes somebody would try. I want somebody to try and take me, because then I'm just going to do all the stuff, you know, see if I can get out, you know. And I was so encouraged and so, the good pride I feel welled up in me, because I thought, you know, if my kid is not fearful, she's not afraid, she's ready for it. And I think it's because I've given her tools on purpose to be able to respond quickly to a situation. I'm excited for her.
Shabay, you have some very specific ideas about sleepovers. I think it will tie in nicely over here. Just tell us why you have these rules. What rules do you have? And yeah, just tell us about that.
I think I watch a lot of television. And just watching, I think as much as television is television, they do show a bit of truth in terms of what's happening in society. And just hearing how abuse happens, how bullying happens, and how subtle it can be. We just made, besides reading parenting books that now encourage you not to do it, I wanted to make sure that I made the decision for myself and for our family as a whole, how we could still enjoy sleepovers, but at the same time have very strict and clear boundaries in terms of how that happens. So from very little, we just said no. We just said no sleepovers at all. Nobody's, you're not going to a friend's house, you're not coming to from a friend's house. We don't even have sleepovers with cousins and stuff. Just from little, because in terms of relaying a scenario, my little people wouldn't be able to tell me, you know, what happened. I think we let our oldest sleep at my mom and dad's place for the first time only when she was 6 years old. because then she could completely be able to say this and this and this happened and whatever. And that was very important for me in terms of being able to tell us if anything happened, if she was uncomfortable with anything or whatever. So those, they only sleep over with my mother and sometimes with my father's there. And so now in terms of the actual sleepovers, we made the rule that if you want to have a sleepover, it is only the same sex that's allowed to be there. So in other words, it's if I've got two girls, they will have two girlfriends of their own, and their moms are to be present as well for the sleepover. And then you're probably thinking, like, okay, where do you find the space for all these people? And that was the rule. And so if there wasn't space, then that's not going to happen. And so when we have had the space for it, then the moms were sleeping in certain bedrooms, and then the children were all camped out in the lounge or whatever. But my husband is not present. He leaves the house, and he'll go sleep at my mom or dad or whatever. And the reason for that is not that I don't trust my husband. It is just also to make sure that that he cannot be negatively accused in any way. So I'm protecting him, and any like misunderstood scenario can happen, or any malice that can happen. That was the rule for why he is always away. And then the other thing that we do in terms of having the moms with. Is that no matter what age, little girls are little girls, and they can get up to, they can get pretty nasty pretty quick, and we want to be able to have as many advocates present should the need arise. So, and everybody understands their own kid best, and then you're able to, instead of many a time I've heard stories where the child's just like phoning at 10:30 at night, "Mommy, I don't want to be here anymore because so-and-so is being yucky to me." And it's like, okay, but where's her mom? "No, she's sleeping and I don't want to say anything." You know, and that breaks my heart. And unfortunately, that is a scenario when kids get tired, they get nasty, and it's just not, you don't want your child to be in a difficult situation. That alone. And then there's still the scenario of that one might have a phone and one might have in imagery or information that you just don't want your child to be exposed to quite yet. My oldest one now is at an age where we can talk that through, and there are tools and stuff online to help your children identify good and bad pictures. And we can't just limit pornography to little boys. We have to make sure that our little girls are also protected from it as well. Those are the fundamental reasons why, and just how we've gone about it. So even now we're planning a sleepover in October for our children, and then it's a case of, okay, because my kids have guy friends, we've been very intentional with that as well. So if they want to spend time with the guy friends, then they are allowed to be there with their families until 10 o'clock. The families then leave, and then their girlfriends get to stay with the moms overnight, and then everybody leaves in the morning. So I'm not removing the luxury from the child, and because they are great experiences, but I'm making it as safe and as good for them as it should be, and without them losing out on life social experience.
Yeah, I heard from a friend, she was at a sleepover as a teenager, and they were looking at a horror film, and she said how it bothered her right through adulthood. So something as simple as that, something that was inappropriate for her.
Yeah, and we were at a parenting session once, and this talking about sleepovers and whatever, and this one mom broke my heart to hear her story, Shane. She said that every year this one child in the class had sleepover, and she had let her child go to the sleepover the year before, and now the sleepover came up again the year later, and her daughter said, "No, I don't actually want to go. I don't want to go to the sleepover." And so she asked her why, but you're such good friends with her. She goes, "No, because last time they pulled out an iPad and they showed these funny videos, and I just didn't like what I was watching. And And that what broke my heart is that it took a year for her to tell her mom. And that you don't want. You want to be able to, I think also it's be intentional about your relationship and communicating with your kids, even if they are school going, is to make that time to get into their world, because if you don't, it's, you can miss out. I mean, that's a whole year of that child processing that with her friends and not having spoken to her parents, and yeah.
Sure. On that topic, we did touch on it, that she was saying about the relationship with the child, and clearly you've got a close relationship, but what do you have any extra advice for us if you don't yet? How do we cultivate that relationship, that when we want to have these discussions, there's already a platform for us to build on? How do we do that?
I think it's a lot easier as a homeschooling mother. I think this question would be best answered for the school-going parent. I know that I grew up as a school-going child, and it's a case of you have to be strategic, and you have to make sure that there are slots in the day that you don't compromise on as a family. So it is. So depending on your family dynamic, I know there's some families that will wake up at like 4 in the morning to get ready for the day, and there's just no time in the day, in the morning, to do anything. But then again, there's still the evenings, and it's a case of saying, okay, this meal we do together. And we do together by looking at each other. There's no devices on and whatever. And so I know a school-going family, this is what they do. They do their dinners together all the time. It's not, there's no compromising. I think when they get older, in terms of being 17, 18 years old, it's a little bit different. But up until the age of 13, 14 years old, that being saying, this is the meal that we do together, and this is what we do at mealtime. And cultures, and being interested in each other's worlds. So, it's just an idea. So then it's asking the question, what was your highlight and what was your low light today? And actually listening and taking the time to listen. And it's amazing how what you think is a highlight for your child is not. And what is a low light for your child is not. Like, my child can get like disciplined 6 times in a day, and yet his low light is the fact that the wheel on his car broke. And so, you know, because that was a low light for me, the fact that I had to be drilling into this kid this whole day. And meanwhile, for him, it's like, no, my car broke, and just tragic. And doing that consistently every day, and then they know that this is where my outlet is. It's like, this is where I'm going to be able to tell mom and dad what I need in the day. If it is that bedtime hour, if it's bath time, if they know this is the slot where I get to download, that's when the relationship generally, like, it grows. I am intentional with extramural runs when I have one child in the car. Because I've got 3, when the one is in the car, that is when I take the opportunity to be with that one. And I ask them, okay, so how's it going? What are you thinking about? Who do you like at the moment? Has anybody been nasty to you? Was the ballet teacher, is it still going well? And actually being intentional in that specific child's life. And we started it from as young as 10 months old. The moment that they could spoon food into their mouths, they know that this is what we do. Because we do highlights and lowlights at mealtime. And my son is like, whoever shouts highlight gets to go first. And everybody has to listen to the person that's speaking. Yeah. That we all, I think it's showing intent to relationship with each other. And they also get to spot things in each other. I think that's also the beauty of siblings. Not everybody has that gift because of biological reasons, but my oldest will notice something in the youngest, talk to her about it, and then come and tell me, which is also great because she'll be able to say, you know, mom, actually, Irena, it happened a few weeks ago. Irena's sad because the gymnastics teacher spoke to her harshly. And I was like, but why didn't she come to me? She says, no, she didn't want to get the gymnastics teacher into trouble. Because she knows I would be her advocate. She knew I was going to go in
guns blazing.
But no, let me not say that. That's what her assumption was. She thought that that's what mommy's going to do. I'm going to be in trouble and I'm going to be picked on. And this is what goes through their heads. And then I was able to go to her and say, right, you know what, it's okay that you tell me. And if you're afraid of me going to the teacher, you can also say that it's okay, that you're afraid that I'm going to make a big scene. And then I will ask you, what do you think I should do? And I think that's also another thing, is that actually asking your child their opinion. And that they have a point of view, and that they have their own perspective on the world. Once they realize that you are interested in their perspective, they give it more. And it's hectic. I get it in before they're 10.
Yeah.
Because I can see on my oldest, it's starting to that shutters thing is huge. So if you can get in there with relationship as soon as possible, the better.
Shabay, I've got one more question before we'll give everyone a chance to Q&A. You mentioned the word advocate, and we had a really good discussion about you being your child's advocate. And I think in terms of safety, that's so important. Please share with us, how do you act as an advocate for your kids, and why is this so important for you? I know it wasn't on the list.
No, it's not even that. I think it's also because my mother's amazing in terms of this. Like, we're a very my personality is very justice driven. So I'm very much about justice and doing things right, and you know, do it properly, and don't skimp on stuff. And if this is what you said you're going to do, then you must do it. Don't waver. Or if it's black, it's black. If it's white, it's white. My husband has helped me to see the grey. He's the pastoral one. I don't get involved in church matters like that, because everybody will just be like, cut. And it's like, I'm going to howl. You belong there.
It's like, no, we love
you. Get this child.
It's scaring the child.
Okay, it's fine. I think it's important for them to see that you are there for them, but in a way that they feel safe. Like my daughter knows, in her saying about the gym coach, she knows mom's going to go for it. But at the same time, I've also had to teach them that they need to stand up for themselves, because sometimes the advocate isn't going to always be there. I'm not always going to be there to stand up for you. I'm not always going to be there for you to tell the coach that's not okay. And that has happened, and it's a case of... When they're little, it's a simple thing of telling her to get off the knee of the uncle, the mister, the missus, the whatever, and saying, you know, this is not okay. Teaching the child, but also helping the adult understand the boundary. I think it's right. In terms of being, it's my responsibility as a parent. My children are gifts, they are treasures for me to guard and to protect for as long as I can, until they are able to then do it for themselves. And I take that quite seriously, in terms of my approach to everyday life. So it's not only because parenting is tiring. It is taxing. It is every day. It is all the time. It is the hugest marathon, longest marathon to run, I feel, besides marriage. It's a long. It is, and each one is equally hard work, and you have to be intentional with it all. So in terms of standing up and being there for your kids, it's speaking up when they need to be spoken up for, and also knowing when not to, because there's some things that the child needs to take responsibility for. So if the child is wrong, or that they need to learn to exercise their authority in the situation, they also need to be given and pushed into that space. We had this with my oldest, where we don't use the term naughty in our house. We were very intentional about that. We also don't. We when they were little, I remember I didn't want my child's first word to be no. I didn't want them to like be 2 years old and like no, and yet mom and dad hasn't been said yet. Mm-hmm. So we came up with ways of saying stop that, don't do that, and that was being intentional, so that they like know I'm going on a rabbit trail. But, so like, say, so in terms of the term naughty, we didn't ever say you are naughty. We'd rather say you are misbehaving, or you are, instead of saying you are something, it's rather you are being something, or this behavior is inappropriate, or not labeling the child. So now with that culture in our home, my child got to gymnastics. I think this is the example I'm giving you, is that she was at gymnastics, and the coach, bless his heart, comes from a different culture, and where he thought he was playing a game in terms of saying to them, oh, you got, girls are such naughty girls. And she didn't like that because she knew what it meant. And so she stepped aside and actually said to him, coach, no, we are not naughty. And so he's like, no, I was just meaning da 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 da. So stop being silly. Stop, you're being silly about this. And so she's like, but coach, what you're saying, we are not naughty. We are trying to, and so then she ended up bursting into tears because she got overwhelmed by the fact that she's confronting an adult about something. And then he didn't understand her and told her to sit on the side. And so there was a bit of a, and so then she was upset because now she's being reprimanded for something she thought was right. And then they came home with it. It was the only one night of gymnastics that I wasn't there. Like, it was one of those where I should have been there to at least been her advocate and help them understand each other. So when she came home, I asked her, okay, so what happened again? So she explained to me, and I understood her side. Then I decided, okay, I'm not going to run to the head coach and be like, the head coach, you know, like, you know what, you need to sort out your person, and this is this. I actually thought, no. We actually need to honor and respect the role of the teacher or the whatever, the coach or whatever. I need to respect them, so I need to hear their side in terms of being the advocate. So I went to the coach and I said, what is this? Is this what happened? And so then he then explained. And I think he came up with a bit of a guard because he's like, oh, this child has told on me and now this mother is coming at me. Because lots of parents do. They go in and they just want to cut the poor authoritarian out of it and they're getting that all the time. So I was like, okay. I said to him, listen, I just want to understand so I can help you understand each other. And then he explained the situation and I said, okay, I understand you were joking. And I think I told him, this is our family culture. And this is why she felt what she needed to say to you. So she wasn't being disrespectful. She was trying to be this and this. So then he was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I said, okay, please wait here. I went and I spoke to my daughter. I said, okay, now you have to take responsibility and go and apologize to the coach for the fact that you were misunderstood and you didn't communicate well. And he will also apologize for what you have done. And so they went and they reconciled and they sorted it out and we're fine after that, and they understood each other better. And I've approached every scenario like that with everybody in their life in terms of in authority or anything. I don't immediately run to the person in charge and complain and whine or whatever. If I don't get anywhere with the person on the ground, that's when I go. But I do advocate for my kid in a sense that I help the understanding to come. And if the understanding doesn't come, then I take it to the next level. And then I remove my child from the situation. Because then it's not, they it's no longer their fight. And yeah, so I, yeah.
Yeah, I think, not that I want to rabbit trail on that, but what you're also saying is you're teaching your kids to be assertive.
Yes.
So that you are teaching them how to be able to stand up for themselves.
Yes.
And if they are ever confronted in a situation where they are uncomfortable or unsure, they'll actually be able to speak out.
Yes.
And that's what we want. And where they are still learning, you are stepping in and assisting them and giving them an example.
Yes.
They will follow that. So that is,
yeah. I'm even being intentional with my girls at the moment as well, in terms of the culture of the day, is that it's not okay for somebody to speak to you a certain way. It's not okay. We don't use the term sexy in our house because they've asked what it means. And then I'm just like, actually, there is no meaning. There are better words, adjectives to use. Like, we can use beautiful, amazing, pretty, gorgeous, all of these terms. We said to them, that term is used for between husband and wife. And that is a special place for that, because that is an intimate thing. It's not something that some guy from across the road can tell you. And also, you're 4 years old. How can you be called sexy? And that immediately puts that label on you. And so they're also aware of how of the power of language and how to be treated, even in dress code. It's amazing. I thought I was only going to be aware with it with my girls. If you wear a dress, you wear tights. I don't care how. At the moment, I'm trying to teach my oldest one how long the tights need to be. she's like, no, I've got them on, and she lifted her skirt in the shop, and I was like, where the shop did that? She's like, lifting. I'm like, I know the tights are there, but you know there are men around. Please don't do that. And so then I had to say to her, you need to make sure that they're visible. No, it's true, because it looks like it's not there only when she does a cartwheel or whatever, but she's 11 years old. She can't have her goodies just showing everywhere. So I thought it was only going to be with my girls about the modesty and the dress code or whatever, but I'm actually feeling it with my son now, is that he can't just run around in his underpants. As much as we were living in an era when we were growing up of innocence, it is no longer that.
Yes.
And with the online presence, I have to think about, okay, if this child is photographed now, would I be okay with his photograph being out there with some sicko looking at it? And so I have to think, okay, my son, you always wear a vest, you always wear shorts.
Yeah, even at the beach, people sometimes strip naked, and the kids, and they can just run around. But I feel that we can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Sorry, Chauvet, I felt with my eldest daughter, I don't even let her swim in that one piece that doesn't have a pants. When it's just us at my parents' pool, that's fine. I let her, but she's got a skirt, and she knows she has to wear it at the beach. Because I once saw a little girl wearing this one piece, and I thought, well, that's quite revealing for a little girl. And people do not think and act as we do, and if people, they can look at her in a different way that we don't want.
And I think it's that biblical principle of being as cunning as serpents, but as gentle as doves. And it's not that we are thinking evil thoughts, it's a case of us being aware of who we're up against. It's like you don't go into war just flailing your sword everywhere. You have to be like, okay, no, if I want to hit and if I want to do this well, I need to understand my enemy. And it's a case of understanding, okay, I want to protect as best as I can without my unit feeling afraid. And so therefore, as the general or the person in charge of this unit, I'm going to find out how that enemy operates. And also just trust the Holy Spirit to show me what I need to know. Because you don't want to just go digging into everything for no reason, because that's just not, it's just not healthy, I don't think. And also, depending on the call that your child has, I think that each child has a call, and we're here to help expose them to what they need to be exposed to in order to fulfill what God's destined them to have in their lives, and to teach them how to be ready for that.
Let's just see. Does anyone have a specific question they would like to ask Chauvet? I know it's been long. I know the kids are getting tired, but please feel free.
Just specifically now, with regards to the. So my son has just turned 5 years old, and we're starting to have the discussion whether, because him and his 3 year-old sister, they're not bathing together anymore.
Yes.
That's kind of the struggle now, because we said, okay, when you're 5, you're a big boy, and then you can't do it anymore. But I'm looking for ways to explain it to him.
Okay.
Why? You know, just kind of practice, and just instead of just saying, okay, maar jy is nou groot. And in the same way, teaching him body consciousness to know that, you know, this is now, it's private. Because I don't have a problem with him bathing with a 6-month-old, but the 3-year-old, it's not on, and he's questioning me about
why is that?
About why. So, and also to explain it to this 3-year-old why she can't bathe with her brother anymore. And also he's not showering with me anymore, she's not showering with dad anymore. But it's just difficult to explain to them in language that they're going to.
They understand. I've started with my with each one. I started about three years old. I say I don't wash them. I wash their bodies, but I don't wash their body, their private parts. I start the language at bath time. Whose is this? And so then, in fact, no, I first start out, what is this? It's like, okay, this is your arm, this is your elbow, this is your hand, this is your bum, this is your leg, this is your knee, this is your penis. And using the real words, we've been very intentional, this is what it is. And so, and then they become aware of like, ooh, and then we went through a whole phase of, everybody look at my penis. She ran around the house like, ah! And we're like, okay, that's not appropriate. Okay, keep your underpants on. And what he's had is that obviously his sisters, it's like, oh, he wanted to know, my son, he wanted to know, how do the girls wee?
Yeah.
Like, they're sitting down. It's like, they're sitting down, I'm standing up. And he started barging in on my mother-in-law, who stays with us. I wanted to know how she's making a wee. And so we're like, no, girls, wee through their vagina. The vagina works different. And giving him the honest technical terms at their level. And now we've started the whole thing, whose is this? It's mine. It's yours. And I stop washing it. Because I say, no, it's yours. Here's your responsibility. You clean it because it's yours. And it's like, who gets to touch this? Because boys touch themselves, it's disgusting. I don't get it, but this is what they do. And so, and every man has said, well, that's just what boys do. And I'm just like, okay, this is gross. And so then it's now a case of, okay, this is yours, you wash it. And so your response to, and so I said, who gets to touch it? And he goes, me. So I said, does daddy get to? He goes, no. And I had to teach him that. So I'm like, daddy doesn't touch, mommy doesn't touch, grandy doesn't touch, papa doesn't, nobody touches, this is yours. And therefore, it's only yours. And so because it's yours, the one thing we also started doing is that they have to knock before coming into a room. It's like, if they're accidentally coming in to the room whilst you're changing, we don't shy away.
You don't want to be body shaming. You don't want it to be an awkward situation.
So we've been relaxed about it because I must admit my husband has no scum. I'm the one that's like, okay, this is a bit much. But having that freedom with a boundary and saying, okay, you know what, this is actually your special time and her special, I think it's changing the language. To saying, okay, it's not about that you can't bath with each other. It's changing the perspective of it's not a can't. It's a this is yours. It's your special time. You get to have dad and mom get to come and talk with you whilst you bath, and that's the time that could be your conversational relational time. I think it's changing the perspective of how it is instead of saying you can't, because at the moment with any child, any age, shame you y'all pick up. The moment you start saying can't and don't do, they immediately want to know why, and they immediately want to encroach on the information beyond that. It's just turning the perspective.
Because we've been teaching that now when anyone is going to the bathroom, that when you go to the toilet, when you go to the loo, that you'll be private.
Yes.
So that they understand, and you know, they'll knock and they won't go in. So I should probably just to extend that to bath time is now also private time.
Yeah, because when the sex talk comes, they're going to get curious.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, my daughter's constantly, we had the sex talk, they've known exactly how it all works from the age of six. No, it was because the curiosity was there, and we needed to get in ahead of time, because if you're in school now, you have to get in then, because the kids are sharing pornography at the age of eight. And so I think you need to step up to the reality that South Africa is the highest in the world in terms of paid online and cell phone pornography, and it's between the ages of 9 and 15 years old.
Yeah.
And so it's being very aware of that. You have to get in early. It's not a case of, it's not a joke anymore. But you want to be strategic, and you want to make sure that it's at his level, and that it's a special thing, and that it's, yeah.
And so the eight is too late it's actually true.
Yeah,
and you know what, it's
and don't make it a meeting. The moment you make it a meeting, then they're going to think, oh, this is the only time I'm going to get to talk to mom and dad is when we have a meeting. It's a case of just everydayness of asking them what they think, I think the moment you ask them what they think, then you know at which level you can give them information. At 5 years old, asking them, so where do you think babies come from? We did it with my four-year-old at the table the other day, and we were like, okay, so where do you think babies... My oldest were laughing their heads off because they know exactly how it works. And I was asking him, so Jude, what do you think? Where do you think babies come from? Oh, no, they come from Jesus. Okay. So did you? And then I asked him, I said, so did you come from Jesus? He goes, yes, I came from Jesus. So I said, okay, so why were you in mommy's tummy? No. And then he comes up with this thing. He says, no, the mommies carry the girls. And the daddies have the boys. Yeah. But then I was like, okay, but then how did you get into mommy's tummy? And then he sits there and he's like, I don't know. Why was it? And he starts looking to his sisters, and his sisters are like laughing, and like they know, and it's like, oh, mom, don't. How can you tell this to him? And like, no, I said I'm laying foundation because I want to get in there. And so then he, then I said, okay, Jude, this is how mommies, this is how babies get there. And I said, a mommy and a daddy pray, and they hug, and they hug. No, and I'm doing it on purpose, because he's four. I think when you think, it's young, but I'm giving it to him in his language. And I say, and they join their hearts together and pray. I didn't say hug. I said they join their hearts together, and they pray and ask God for the baby. And God gives them the baby. And so then he was like, okay. And I could see he was happy with that answer because then it made sense to him why mommies and daddies are together. And I thought, okay, I've put it in, the seed is there, and I will revisit it in 6 months. But my two oldest ones were like, you're right, a hug. Like, it's more than a hug, mom. And I'm like, shh, you have to be quiet. You can't let him have more than he's meant to have right now. Yeah, oh, whatever, mom. We've been intentional also to be free about our marital relationship with our children, because we want them to know that it is fun, that it is something that is to be enjoyed in our family, in our marriage, and that God made it that way. And they can see the reality of it. I even ask them when they see single parents, when they've seen parents get divorced, I ask them their opinion. I say to them, okay, so what do you think of that? What is your opinion of that? Like, do you see that? My sister got divorced, and when she did, my kids freaked out because they thought it was going to happen to us. And it wasn't that they didn't verbalize it. They were starting to be, where's dad? Why isn't dad here? Have you checked where dad is? Like, and I'm just like, guys, chill. It's not going to happen to us. We've made the decision. This is not going to happen. Yeah, but da 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 da. And I said, no. This is what we've decided. This is what we're going to do. And so in terms of that, giving them that security, but also giving them the security of the fact that, hey, guys, you know, mom and dad need alone time. Oh, wow. And then my oldest is like, I know. And I said, yeah, you know. And it's a good thing, isn't it? And she's like, yeah, it's kind of gross, but yeah. Okay. And then they move on. But we want that for them. We want them to see that this is what marriage is like, that it is, that we argue and that we fight and that we make up and that we love each other and that there is a good sexual relationship and that it is to be honored, we honor each other, and that it's we are given the freedom in the boundary of what God's given us. And the boundary God gave us is that sex is to be between a man and a woman in covenant relationship between them, each other, and with God. And that's why we do.
I can just add something to your question about them having a bath together. I also got girls and boys that are quite close together. So what I do is, because they love playing in the bath, so like once a week, I let them have a bath together, but they wear their swimming costumes. Because they love playing together in the bath, so then we do that, and the rest of the time they shower, so they do that separately.
Any other questions? Okay. Right. Do you have any last comments?
Yeah, there's a verse that I had that I've heard. I don't know if you've heard of Lisa Bevere.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I follow her on Instagram, and she had, she was just talking on the one point. She said, now is not a time for us to be fearful. It is a time for us to stand up and to stand with courage and to look danger in its face and say, come. And she read the scripture Matthew 10 verse 26 is powerful. And she read it from the Message, and I thought this was so powerful as a especially as a mother to hear exactly what we're going through, because fear is intimidating. It comes and it tries to make itself so big and so huge. Yet actually, come on. Like, you know, who's on our side? Who are we standing with? And we have to constantly remind ourselves of that. But when you have children, even in the womb, you feel like, oh my word, this is huge. Like, it's fear becomes very real. And so she read this Matthew 10:26-27, and she specifically read it from the Message. And it says, don't be intimidated. Eventually, everything is going to be out in the open. And everyone will know how things really are. Which is what's happening, is that there's a lot more exposure to what's happening in the genocide and femicide and just rape culture and safety culture with your children and stuff. It's all coming out. And so it says, so do not hesitate to go public now. Don't be bluffed into silence by the threats of bullies. There's nothing they can do to your soul, your core being. Save your fear for God, who holds your entire life, body and soul, in his hands. And I thought that was just so powerful, because another thing that I'm teaching my children right now is that bad things happen, and it's okay. Things are gonna feel sore. We don't live in an imperfect world. So I've even started teaching them about what happens if you do get kidnapped. What happens if you do get hurt? What happens if you do have an accident? What then? You are separated from us, and then what? Mm-hmm. And it was quite a hard one, because they were like, no, we'll break out and we'll run, like, you know, we'll do whatever. So I said, yes, that's fine, but what if we don't get to you? What if you're stuck? What if you're there for 6 to 12 months and you're not with us? And then they were like, okay, whoa. And I said, who is with you? And then they were like, Jesus will be. And I said, exactly. And that is the relationship you build now. That is the relationship you dive into. That is who you learn to communicate with. Because no matter where you are, be it good or bad, be it sad or happy, he's the one holding your hand. And that for me is what I want to leave you with, is that I think that fundamentally that's what you're teaching your kids, is that that's the relationship they should be digging for, is a relationship with Jesus, and that they should go to him for what they need.
Thank you. Thank you so much.